Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I'm your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, the man who calls it right down the middle, Dion Tyree Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. NFL Week 5. There's a whole lot of shit to talk about on the field and off the field. Let's get right to the nitty-gritty, right to the meat and potatoes of the situation. Start with Monday Night Football. In a city I'm very familiar with, Baltimore, Maryland, in an old-school classic matchup. A matchup that has sentimental value to many folks back in that part of the country, the Baltimore Ravens and the Indianapolis Colts. Once upon a time, the Colts were in Baltimore. A little history lesson for some folks out there. They moved in the middle of the night in 1983. Every time I think about that, you know, when I'm watching this matchup last night, I think about my great-grandfather who told me a long time ago that he stopped watching football in 1983 when the Baltimore Colts left town in the middle of the night on a Mayflower truck and moved to Indianapolis. He said right then and there in 1983, he stopped watching football until the day he died in 2007. That's some powerful shit. That's very powerful. He is not the only one who feels those wounds, that bitterness, that vitriol towards the Indianapolis Colts, who were formerly the Baltimore Colts. So this was a big matchup, just on the strength of that. A lot of people, you know, nationally might not understand the significance of this matchup, but locally, as someone from the state of Maryland, I'm very familiar with the importance and the relevance of this matchup. A lot of folks in that part of the country still hold ill will and bad feelings towards the Colts for leaving town, but they got a good football team in the Baltimore Ravens. In 96, this is a two-time championship team. This is a team that makes the playoffs every year. And this is a team that right now is 4-1 and one of the best teams in the AFC. This is a model of consistency. The Baltimore Ravens, I've spoken about this before, one of the best organizations in the National Football League. There's nothing wrong with the Baltimore Ravens. And there's nothing wrong with Lamar Jackson. For so long, even dating back to when Lamar was a collegiate athlete at the University of Louisville, so many people said he's not really a quarterback. He's a glorified running back. He's a phony quarterback. He'll have to switch positions in the NFL. Lamar Jackson can't play quarterback. This is what I've heard for years now. This is what I've been told by fans, by media members, by alleged experts and pundits and analysts. So many people have questioned the quarterbacking ability of Lamar Jackson. So many people have said there's only one way he can play. He gets exposed. He's not that good. He can't throw passes outside the numbers. He can't throw it down the field. He's inaccurate. He's not a real quarterback. Well, ask the Indianapolis Colts if Lamar Jackson is a real quarterback. Down 19 points last night, 22-3. The Colts appear to be cruising their way to a victory, which would have been their second victory of the season. Yet Lamar Jackson, 2019 NFL League MVP Lamar Jackson, put some respect on this brother's name. What is it going to take? All this disrespect, all this hate, all this negativity. This brother is a former league MVP. Just 2 years ago, he threw 36 touchdown passes and 6 interceptions, but he's not a good quarterback. He's not a real quarterback. He can't throw the football. Bullshit. 37 out of 43, over 400 yards, overcoming a 16-point deficit, 4 touchdown passes. Lights out football in the second half of this game. Throwing dimes downfield to Hollywood Brown, having a great connection with tight end Mark Andrews all throughout the game. Kicking ass, taking names. Lamar Jackson, right now, currently, is a top 5 quarterback in the National Football League. Fuck what you heard and fuck whoever told you that dumb shit to begin with. Lamar Jackson, right now, as we speak, 11:36 Pacific Coast Time, Tuesday, October the 12th, 2021, is a top 5 quarterback in the National Football League. Period. Point blank, I don't want to hear nothing to the contrary. Lamar Jackson is awesome. Would I take him on my football team? Absolutely. Yesterday, I would take him. Any day of the week. Are you fucking kidding me? This dude is incredible. He can make plays happen with his arms and his legs, on schedule, off schedule. He can scramble. And yet, even with the physical and aggressive and risky style of football Lamar Jackson plays, guess what Lamar Jackson doesn't do? He doesn't miss games. He doesn't really get hurt. He's on the field every week, contributing to his team's success, despite running around so much and making plays and being so elusive and mobile. He doesn't get hurt. He doesn't miss games. He's on the field and available to play football every week and put his team in the best position to win. You think about all the injuries that Baltimore had with Gus Edwards and Marcus Peters and guys like that, J.K. Dobbins. These are quality football players we're talking about. Those are three very good football players, and they're all out for the season right now. And coming into this season, so many people doubted Baltimore. They must have forgot. Like I said, this is a model of consistency. This is a real football team and a great organization, and they got a lights-out top five former MVP, probably can win an MVP again this season. Lamar Jackson is awesome. Point-blank period. He's carrying this football team right now, especially with the aforementioned Marcus Peters being out. Baltimore's pass defense, not that good. Carson Wentz became the second quarterback this season to throw for more than 400 yards against the Ravens this season. Wentz continually picked on Baltimore quarterback Anthony Averett, who had been playing well in place of injured Marcus Peters, but the Ravens figured out a way to exploit him and take advantage of his inexperience and his lack of talent compared to Marcus Peters. Now, you think about, first of all, look at the competition Baltimore's played. They've played some good quarterbacks, Derek Carr, Patrick Mahomes, Carson Wentz, who I will always say is a good NFL quarterback, despite what other folks will say or circumstances around it. But I'm the president, chairman, and CEO of the Carson Wentz fan club. I'll always defend him. I think he's a good player and a really good quarterback if he has something around him and if he's healthy. He has the talent and the skill set to be an elite quarterback. He's just always banged up and got an injury he's dealing with, or he's failed by the organization like he was in Philadelphia. But the point is, Baltimore has gone against some tough quarterbacks so far this season, and you've seen the results. Their secondary has been lit up with the absence of Marcus Peters. So that's something to keep an eye on going forward. Can Baltimore tighten up their secondary and play better football? Can they tackle in the open field? Can they limit big plays? They're going to have to do that. They play in a tough division. They got to deal with Cleveland and Cincinnati twice a year each. Pittsburgh is never a pushover. You know, the AFC North is a brutal division. So Baltimore's got a lot of competition in that division, but currently they sit at 4-1. And the one game they lost was an overtime loss to the Las Vegas Raiders. More on them throughout the podcast. Trust me, there's a lot to talk about with the Las Vegas Raiders. Let's talk about the Indianapolis Colts in this game. The Colts were 120-0 when leading by at least 16 points in the fourth quarter. Now that's 120-1 if they blew a 19-point lead in this game. Linebacker Darius Leonard called it the worst loss he's ever been a part of. He looked dejected in the postgame news conference. He looked like someone shot his dog. You know, this is a team in Indianapolis that had high expectations. This is a very talented roster. They thought bringing in Carson Wentz would be the answer to their problems. And you can't blame Carson Wentz for this loss anyway. He threw for over 400 yards, 402 to be exact, two touchdowns, no interceptions, no turnovers at all. Oh, he had a fumble. He played good football for the most part. I mean, you're up by 19. You should close the deal. You should finish that game with a victory. And this is a team only one win this season. They picked up their first win last week versus a sorry Miami Dolphins team. I don't know what the hell is going on in Miami. Actually, I do. They have no quarterback play. And the defense is getting exposed. More on them later. But the Colts, I mean, fortunately for them, they play in a terrible division. Where the only other real football team in that division are the Tennessee Titans. Houston and Jacksonville are both garbage. So Indianapolis is not out of this thing yet. But they're going to have to get something figured out on special teams. Rodrigo Blankenship had an injured hip coming into the game. So we'll give him a small pass. Started feeling pain in his hip during pregame warmups. The injury caused him to miss an extra point and the potential game-winning 46-yard field goal as time expired. So you left about 4 points on the field. You lost the game in overtime, 31-25. I knew watching this game, once Baltimore forced it to go to overtime, once Blankenship missed that potential game-winning kick, I knew it was over. Because all you had to do was look at the physical body language of the Indianapolis Colts. They looked gassed. They looked physically and emotionally spent. They had nothing left. And that, to me, is a byproduct of chasing around a mobile, dual-threat quarterback like Lamar Jackson. He will wear you down throughout the entire game. He will wear your pass rush down. You get tired of chasing a guy like that. And going into overtime, I knew Baltimore was going to win this game. As soon as they won the coin toss and got the ball first, overtime rules dictate that a touchdown wins the game. I knew Baltimore was going to win this game. They're going to take it right down the field and score. That's exactly what Lamar did. Took it down the field. They scored a touchdown. They won the game 31-25. Baltimore improves to 4-1. Indianapolis is at 1-4 right now. They got a game this Sunday versus Houston. That's a winnable football game. Houston's not that good. They're rebuilding. It's a young roster. They're one of the worst teams in the NFL this season. And then they come out of that 2 weeks from now, they play the San Francisco 49ers, who, I mean, you already know how I feel about my own team. The 49ers are not exactly a good football team. Let's just be honest about what we're talking about. Indianapolis could very well roll into Santa Clara and beat the 49ers on Sunday night in 2 weeks. Carson Wentz torched this last season playing for the Eagles. So it's not like it's a sure thing. The 49ers are not in a position to be a sure thing to beat anybody. There's a myriad of problems that I've already detailed on multiple podcasts with my beloved 49ers. So the Colts have an opportunity to get right. They're 1-4 right now. They could easily be 3-4 going forward. Tennessee is not exactly a solid football team either. They have some problems. Julio Jones and A.J. Brown have not been the dynamic 1-2 punch that people thought they would be on the outside. Also with Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry is doing his job. But the passing game for Tennessee really hasn't been what people thought it was going to be. So there's a path for Indianapolis to get back into this division race and make a fight out of it. We'll see what happens going forward. But Baltimore 31, Indianapolis 25. Moving on to the Sunday night football game. The massacre, the ass-whooping, the curb-stomping, the beat-down that took place on Sunday night football in Kansas City, Missouri. The Buffalo Bills, Bills Mafia, picked up Patrick Mahomes and choke-slammed him through a table. Threw him face first into a plate of potato salad, set him on fire, gave him a stone cold stunner, a clothesline from hell, put him in the sharpshooter and a crippler cross face. They kicked the Kansas City Chiefs' ass on Sunday night, 38-20, and it wasn't even that close. Here's all you need to know about this game. Two things. The Chiefs' defense is abysmal. It's awful. It's terrible. It's the drizzling shits. It's ranked number 32 in the league for a reason. They suck on defense. They got a lot of problems over there in KC. This is not a good football team. They turn the ball over too much on offense. Defensively, they can't stop anybody. They suck right now. 2-3, they've already lost two games at home, and really, they're a blown punt away from the Cleveland Browns in week one. They're a blown punt away from being 1-4. The only game they looked impressive in was last week versus Philadelphia. They put up 42. Other than that, they lost to Baltimore on Sunday night, then got beat up by the Chargers, a division rival, 2 weeks ago, and they lost this game, getting their asses kicked by Buffalo. Cleveland had them. Like I said, they fumbled a punt and opened the door for KC to come back and win their game. But KC right now is going through that Super Bowl swoon. When teams lose the Super Bowl, they come back the following year, not quite themselves, playing like shit, losing games they usually win, just playing below standard and struggling and just looking pathetic. And that's how Kansas City looks right now. They look pathetic. But the second thing you should know about this game is that Josh Allen is awesome. Josh Allen in this game completed 5 of 6 passes for 213 yards and 2 touchdowns on throws of 15 yards or more, throwing lasers downfield to anybody and everybody. Emmanuel Sanders, Stephon Diggs. Did you see that 42-yard touchdown pass that Josh Allen threw to Emmanuel Sanders? Holy shit. God damn, that's quarterbacking. That's elite-level arm talent. That's what the fuck I'm talking about. I'm a fan of football, obviously. Most of these podcasts have been about football. I'm a fan of the NFL. I'm a fan of college, too. But more specifically, man, I'm a fan of good quarterbacking. I'm a fan of quarterback position to begin with. I'm a fan of the nuance and the subtleties and the mechanics and the fundamentals and the footwork and everything that goes into playing quarterback. And Josh Allen, the arm talent, the throws he can make. Everyone talks about Mahomes' arm talent, and rightfully so, and Aaron Rodgers and Matt Stafford. Josh Allen right now is the best quarterback in the NFL and the best pure thrower of the football. He threw a 40-yard fucking laser downfield to Emmanuel Sanders. That ball might have been 6 feet off the ground and 40 yards in the air on the rope. You couldn't have walked down and handed the ball to Emmanuel Sanders any better. This ball is a 40-yard handoff. Josh Allen throws fucking lasers all over the field. How do you defend that? The DB was in good position. Kansas City did almost everything right. It's just that good of a throw. Josh Allen is elite. The best show in football right now is the Buffalo Bills offense and watching number 17 sling it. That's a bad motherfucker right there. If you're not watching Buffalo Bills games, if you're not paying attention to Josh Allen, you're doing yourself a disservice. Football is better when Josh Allen's throwing it. Fucking phenomenal. He had another laser soon after that where he's flushed out of the pocket, feels pressure, escapes, rolls to his right, doesn't set his feet, is still rolling, throws another 40-yard laser downfield to tight end Dawson Knox, who's wide open, and walks into the end zone for six. Josh Allen is the coldest motherfucker in the NFL right now. That's the coldest man playing football right now. This dude is special. Buffalo Bills fans, you finally got one. After the years of ineptitude at the quarterback position, the tyranny and oppression of J.P. Lossman and Rob Johnson, and E.J. Manuel and Nathan Peterman, and the scattered remains of Drew Bledsoe, all these terrible Buffalo Bills quarterbacks for so many years post-Jim Kelly, congratulations, Buffalo, you finally got one. You have a special, phenomenal, awesome NFL quarterback in Josh Allen. I could talk about Josh Allen and his talent all day. Like I said, I appreciate good quarterback play. It's my favorite position in sports. It's the most important position in sports. It's the most polarizing position in sports. It's everything. The quarterback position means everything. Everything starts and finishes with the quarterback. If you have a great quarterback, that compensates for a lot of things that might be wrong on your team. Buffalo's running game isn't that great. With Moss and Singletary, they're not elite running backs. They're okay. They're not even that good. They're okay for an NFL standard. That offense is carried by Josh Allen. He can beat you with his arms and his legs. He had a rushing touchdown in this game. He actually has more rushing touchdowns in his career than Lamar Jackson does. This dude is special. Buffalo Bills fans, appreciate what you got. You got a good one. The dude's amazing. KC, on the other hand, like I said earlier, too many turnovers. Pringle fumbled a kickoff. Mahomes threw two picks. One was outstanding play by Greg Rousseau, the man, first-round draft pick from the University of Miami from the U. Made a great play at the line of scrimmage to knock the ball down and also pick it off at the same time. Another pick was a pick six from Micah Hyde that bounced off the fingertips of Tyreek Hill. Too many mistakes for Kansas City. Too many just turnovers, just bad plays, just terrible football. They're not playing complimentary football. Turn the ball over, terrible defense, no running game. You're not going to win games. And that's why you're 2-3 right now. Kansas City is in trouble. There's a realistic possibility. You know, this might be a freezing cold take in a few months. I'm going to go ahead and say this right now. The Kansas City Chiefs are going to miss the playoffs. Now, save this recording. It's on file. I just said it. I'm not going to strike it from the record. I just said this. I stand by my word. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I believe, just watching Kansas City play, I don't see it this year. I see a lot of problems. This has been a recurring theme. It's not just one game. Like I said, if it wasn't for a poorly handled punt versus Cleveland, they'd be 1-4 right now. The Baltimore game, stupid turnovers. The Chargers game, stupid turnovers. This game, stupid turnovers. How do you correct that? I don't know what the Chiefs do defensively. They can't stop anybody. If you want to get points, if you play fantasy football, take whoever is going against the Kansas City Chiefs. You're going to be successful. KC's defense can't stop a nosebleed. Daniel Sorensen shouldn't even be on the field right now. He's awful. I mean, he looks like 2005 Adam Archuleta. I don't just say that because he's a white guy and Archuleta was a white guy too. I say that because they're both fucking terrible. Daniel Sorensen is dog shit for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's giving up big plays on a regular basis. If I was a Kansas City Chiefs fan, I'd be fucking pissed at number 49 in red. That dude's terrible right now. Awful. Kansas City's in trouble. We'll see what happens with them going forward, but I'm just making the bold prediction. It's a hot take by the Deion Gordon podcast. I don't think Kansas City's going to make the playoffs this year. The AFC is loaded. You got Buffalo, Cleveland, Baltimore, the LA Chargers in their own division. Cincinnati looks pretty good this year. Denver is 3-2. I mean, the competition hasn't been that great, but they're still 3-2. They got a better record than Kansas City does. The AFC's tough. I don't think it's a guaranteed lock that Kansas City is going to make the playoffs. They still have one of the best and most talented quarterbacks in the NFL in Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. You still have to give them their proper respect, but It's tough. I mean, I don't know how you just fix the defense in the middle of the season. You go back to their Super Bowl year in 2019, they did that. The defense was struggling to begin the season. They got better as the season went along. But the personnel was different. It was better. And that's 2 years ago. You know, I tell people all the time, especially 49er fans, you can't live in the past. You can't dwell on, well, 2 years ago, we were really good at this. The NFL is a year-to-year league. It changes on a yearly basis. It's a copycat league, too. Other teams study what you do on film, pick up on your tendencies, and incorporate the good things you do into their own offense. That little underhanded scoop pass that Mahomes always does near the goal line to Kelsey or whoever the fullback is, or the running back, Edwards-Helaire, whoever. Cleveland copied that over the weekend versus the Chargers. Other teams have copied that. That's what I'm saying. The NFL is a copycat league. The things that you do well and put on tape, other teams watch that tape and try to incorporate that into what they do, which means they practice against it. So when you try to do it, they see it coming now. In 2019, all that bells and whistles and gimmicks that Kansas City was doing caught people off guard. They scored a touchdown with that type of shit in this game. But to me, that's reflective of a soft football team. You can't just line up and run it at somebody. You got to do all this gadgets and trickeration and try to manipulate a touchdown and matriculate the ball down the field. Rest in peace, Hank Stram. Eventually, at some point, you got to play real football. You got to line up and just punch somebody in the mouth. And Kansas City can't do that. And when you can't play physical offense from time to time and also play good defense and you're coughing the ball up and committing costly, stupid turnovers, all of it's a recipe for disaster. The Kansas City Chiefs are in trouble. They could prove me wrong. If they do, fine, I'll salute it. But what I see right now, they're in trouble. They got Washington this week, another team that's in grave danger right now. The Washington football team looks like shit. And that goes back to what I just said. The Washington football team had a great defense last year, not so good this year. Why? You put all that on tape last year. Teams study it, figure it out, what you like to do, your trends, your different calls, everything that made your defense great last year, they figure it out. And this season, unless you make adjustments and adapt and overcome, you're going to get exploited. It's difficult in today's NFL, the pass-happy, offensive-centric NFL, to consistently, on a year-to-year basis, have a lights-out, number one, top five, top 10 defense in the NFL. It's tough to do. And Washington's seeing that right now. And now they got a desperate, hungry Kansas City Chiefs team coming in this weekend. That's going to be an interesting game to pay attention to watch. But moving on to, speaking of the Washington football team, their arch nemesis, their division rival, their longtime hated enemy, those rotten son of a bitch Dallas Cowboys, who are right now playing excellent professional football on both sides of the ball. Last year's Cowboys defense was very charitable. You can get whatever you wanted to versus that Cowboys defense. That Cowboys defense was like a hoe on prom night. They was giving it up to anybody and everybody. They sucked last year. But this year, they made the adjustments. New defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan out. And Dan Quinn in as new DC in Dallas, and has made a world of difference. This is a real defense now. Last year, playing a 5-2. A lot of guys playing out of position. This year, a 4-3, cover 3 defense. Dan Quinn's known for, both at his time as head coach for the Atlanta Falcons and former defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks. And you got guys playing in the correct position. Micah Parsons, the first-round draft pick out of Penn State, made Jalen Smith expendable. They cut him last week because Micah Parsons is playing so well, playing such good football. The Cowboys on both sides of the ball are elite right now. Dak Prescott, coming off that brutal leg injury last year, has played. He hasn't missed a beat. He has not missed a step. If anything, he looks better than what he was before the injury. You know, similar to Paul George in basketball, like you have this horrendous, awful, horrific leg injury where you snap your shit in half, have a fucking bone sticking out, and miraculously you come back and play better. Dak Prescott is in that conversation for top five quarterbacks in the NFL right now. He's also in the MVP conversation. Zeke Elliott is running with the football better. Dak had 3 touchdown passes in this game. Tony Pollard's a good running back. Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, Trayvon Diggs has a pick in every game this season. 5 straight games with an interception. You got guys like Troy Aikman, legendary, prestigious Dallas Cowboy royalty. Like Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin, referring to Trayvon Diggs, the younger brother of Stephon Diggs, as a reminder to them of Deion Sanders. That's lofty praise. That's high regard. That's a lot to put on a young kid's shoulders. But Trayvon Diggs has been outstanding, phenomenal, incredible, wonderful, fucking fire for the Dallas Cowboys this season. You get a pick every game, you're doing something right. This dude's playing good football right now, and so are the Dallas Cowboys. The New York Giants, on the other hand, are not playing good football, and they're losing bodies by the second. In one game, they lost Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley, Kenny Galladay, all to injury. Saquon Barkley rolled his ankle after the route was over. The play was over. He was just running around. He was just walking, basically. Stepped on the guy's foot, rolled his ankle, got carted off the field. Daniel Jones, rushing for a touchdown in the second quarter, made a play at the goal line, got hit. Next thing you know, he's in concussion protocol. Kenny Galladay with a bad knee. The Giants are awful. New York City football is awful. Both the Giants and the Jets are a combined 17-50. 17-50 in the last 5 years. That's not good. That's really badass. That sucks. I talked about this in the podcast before. Say a prayer for New York City football if you're inclined to do such a thing. It's in bad shape. It's in shambles. The Giants and the Jets are both pathetic. It's awful. I'd rather have the Guardian Angels than the New York Giants or Jets right now. They could probably score some touchdowns. The Giants and the Jets suck, and it's not getting any better. And the Cowboys are about to run away with the NFC East. The Eagles will be their only real competition, but they already destroyed Philadelphia 2 weeks ago on Monday night. And they put 41 points on them. That's your only real competition. The Giants are abysmal, and the Washington football team is not good this year. Taylor Heineke, unproven. Defense, like I already said, taking a step back. They're not good. The Cowboys, if everyone remains healthy, it's a big if. But if they can keep their guys together for the majority of the season, the Cowboys are going to run away with the NFC East. They're going to wash the other three teams in that division. It won't even be close. This division usually comes down to the last game of the season. That ain't going to happen this year. The Cowboys are going to have that shit wrapped up by late November, by Thanksgiving. They're going to be NFC East champions by Thanksgiving. As long as everyone stays healthy. That's a quality football team. I don't like saying it because I hate the Dallas Cowboys, but credit is due where credit is due. Right is right and wrong is wrong. I don't mind saluting people, even if I don't like you. The Cowboys are awesome. The only loss this year on the road in Tampa on the NFL kickoff versus the defending Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that game went down to the last second. Took a last second field goal by Tampa to win that game. Dak Prescott threw for over 400 yards in that game, his first football game in 11 months, coming off that horrific, awful leg injury. This team is for real. Cowboys are for real. Either get with it or get lost. The Cowboys are for real. Speaking of for real, we go to SoFi Stadium, the home of Super Bowl 56 this season, in what is, without question, without a shadow of a doubt, unequivocally, the game of the fucking week. The LA Chargers and the Cleveland Browns in the potential preview of the AFC Championship game. And if this game is any indication, I sincerely hope this is the matchup we get for the AFC title game. Justin Herbert on the same level as Josh Allen. It's a toss-up, really. Pick one or two. I would take Josh Allen, a better threat with his legs. But Jesus Christ, both of these guys are awesome. Justin Herbert is incredible. Justin Herbert threw for 398 yards in this game, had five total touchdowns combined. Mike Williams had 8 catches for a 165, 2 touchdowns. Austin Eckler making plays, Keenan Allen making plays. This is a quality football team, both sides of the ball. Rashawn Slater, the first-round draft pick, left tackle out of Northwestern, held up for the most part versus Myles Garrett. Really good football team, both sides of the ball. Joey Bosa, Derwin James on defense. This is an awesome football team. They do struggle in the run defense game, though. The Browns lead the NFL in rushing offense. But giving up 230 yards to a team on the ground is not conducive to winning a Super Bowl. The Chargers are going to have to clean it up if they want to play a home game in the Super Bowl. I always make a joke about the Chargers that they play 17 road games because they seem to never have home field advantage. There's like 47 people on this earth who are Chargers fans. Every game they play is pretty much a road game. Even the games in their own stadium, that Monday night game versus the Raiders last week, Raiders fans took that building over. A lot of brown and orange in the building for this game versus Cleveland. You know, I feel bad for the Chargers. They got good football players, good football team. Other than the 49ers, the best jerseys in the NFL. They're a nice football team. I have no problem with the Chargers. It's just a shame that they're pretty much an afterthought in L.A. and have no real fan base. But people are fickle, so the more the Chargers keep winning, the more fans they're going to get. But back to football. This was an outstanding football game. This is back and forth, fast pace, high octane, a lot of action, yards, points, big plays. Came down to the last second, a desperation Hail Mary pass by my guy, Baker Mayfield. And Baker Mayfield, you know, a lot of people don't like Baker Mayfield. He's a polarizing, controversial guy, I guess. You know, he's charismatic. He's outspoken. He does a lot of commercials. You know, a lot of people think that Baker Mayfield is overrated. They don't like his attitude. He's too cocky, too arrogant. I'm a huge fan of the guy. I don't mind saying it. I've been a fan of Baker Mayfield since I saw him play at Oklahoma. I like the way he plays football. I like cocky, arrogant motherfuckers, as long as you can back it up. And most of the time, Baker Mayfield backs it up. Struggled last week versus Minnesota, but the team still won. They bounced back this week with a torn labrum, by the way. Baker Mayfield's been playing with a torn labrum in his left non-throwing shoulder since about week two versus Houston, but doesn't miss any games. Shows up to work every week. Jimmy Garoppolo, take notes. Baker Mayfield, 23 of 32 for 305, two tutties in this game. Nice game. Your offense put up 42 points. Your quarterback gives you 302 in the air. Chubb and Hunt combined for 230 on the ground. I'm no math major. It's like 532 yards, right? Total offense and then some. You should win that game. This is on the defense. The Browns' defense got carved up. Got thrown down a flight of stairs by the LA Chargers. No shame in that, given the offensive firepower on the other side. I'm just saying, if Cleveland wants to get to where they want to go, to where I predicted they will go, at least get to the Super Bowl. That's my pick. Out of the AFC, I'm picking the Cleveland Browns. I'm sticking with it. They're 3-2 right now, but that game last Sunday could have went either way. This is a good football team. I like the makeup of Cleveland, but they got to get some shit figured out going forward. And they need, as much as I like Baker Mayfield, they're going to need more consistent play out of him because he has struggled in a couple of games this year, in all honesty. But overall, I'm still sticking with my pick. I like the Cleveland Browns. I like the makeup of their team. I like Kevin Stefanski, the head coach. They got a lot to like in Cleveland. They've come a long way. This team was in the fucking toilet for like 20 years. They bounced back nicely. This is a quality football team, but just didn't have enough against Justin Herbert, who in year two, like I said, is a top five quarterback in the NFL. I've been sitting on this top 10 quarterbacks list for a podcast for like a year now. This year, it's going to be tough to even do. I want to do it this season at some point this year, but it's going to be fucking tough because there's so many guys right now. As I said earlier in the podcast, as a fan of quarterbacking and someone who loves and appreciates the quarterback position, there is a smorgasbord of quality quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, Tom fucking Brady, 44, still awesome in everything he does. He's top five right now. He leads the NFL in passing yards. He's 44 years old and leads the NFL in passing yards. I'm going to get to him in a little bit. Matt Stafford is a quality NFL quarterback playing lights out right now. Dak Prescott, same thing, awesome NFL quarterback playing at a high level on a weekly consistent basis. I mean, you got good. Aaron Rodgers playing at an extraordinary level. Joe Burrow's pretty good, playing at a pretty decent level. Not to the level of the guys I just named, but Joe Burrow's making a name for himself right now. I mean, you got this really good quarterback play all over the league. Pretty much every game you watch. Kirk Cousins, quiet as kept, is playing good football this year. Minnesota's record is 2-3. Not the greatest, but you can't blame Kirk Cousins for that. He's thrown one pick all season and about 8 or 9 touchdown passes. He's playing good football. There's good quarterback play almost universally all over the NFL right now. It's fun to watch. Like I said, as a fan of the quarterback position, I appreciate good quarterback play. I watch it. I study film. I study tape. I evaluate it. I love seeing good quarterback play. So salute to all the good quarterbacks in the NFL. The second best game in the week in Cincinnati, Ohio. Let's keep the Ohio football team theme going. the Browns' AFC North counterparts and division rivals, the Cincinnati Bengals, in what was undoubtedly the uniform matchup of the week. I pay close attention to the uniforms that these teams wear. The uniforms are just as much a part of the game as anything else. This was such a beautiful aesthetic, the Packers with that traditional, iconic, signature green and gold uniforms. The same uniforms they wore when Lombardi was the head coach. The Packers' uniforms have never changed. They never should change. They're perfect. And Cincinnati with those black uniforms with the orange trim and the orange stripes and everything, just beautiful. It's a wonderful look for a football game and a great game to match it. 25-22, Green Bay took it. A number of missed field goals in this game, about five missed field goals total for the game. Mason Crosby couldn't connect. He was awful. He missed four field goals by himself. This was a back-and-forth, highly contested game, evenly matched teams, right down to the final second with the overtime. Cincinnati thought they won the game. The ball hit the flag. It was wide left, missed the field goal. Then Green Bay comes back. Aaron Rodgers does Aaron Rodgers things. Mason Crosby finally makes a field goal. Packers walk off with the win. Well-played football game. Joe Burrow, after the game, was in the hospital, or as Vince McMahon would say, a local medical facility with a throat contusion. Fortunately, he's out right now. Sometimes I worry about Joe Burrow. He gets banged up a lot, man. He had a knee injury last year, a devastating torn ACL. You know, he's had a couple of knick-knack injuries here and there. Throat contusion can't be good. But him and Ja'Marr Chase have been a great combination all season. They're both teammates from LSU. They got a great, you know, chemistry and connection with each other, and it's carried over to the NFL. But, you know, Cincinnati's a fun team to watch. Not only Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Joe Mixon up the backfield, it's a fun team to watch. I root for teams like that. Teams have been shit for like 10, 15, 20 years. I root for teams like that to finally get their shit together and put a competent, real football team and real product on the field. So I'm not mad at Cincinnati, man. Keep doing y'all's thing. Keep getting better. I like Joe Burrow. I like Ja'Marr Chase. I like Joe Mixon. They got a lot over there to like. So keep doing your thing, Cincinnati. But came up short this week, Green Bay with the victory. Moving on to the other Bay in the NFL, the aforementioned Thomas Edward Patrick Brady, a.k.a. the GOAT, the greatest quarterback who ever played football. There should be no questions about that. I will state this for the record one more time. This dude is 44 years of age and still playing at a tremendously high level. This doesn't make sense. This guy's an alien. He's a vampire. He's a unicorn. He's not real. I'm going to start drinking avocado smoothies in the hopes that I can be like Tom Brady. This dude is fucking phenomenal. In this game versus the Miami Dolphins, 30 of 41, 411 yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, no fumbles. This was a clinic. I watched this game, watched the highlights and the tape of this game twice. This was surgical. This was a clinic. This was an exhibition, a videotape display of how to play the quarterback position in the correct, proper, and appropriate way. I wish, you know what the 49ers should do? You know, I always got to make everything about the 49ers. They should take a tape of this game and show it to Trey Lance. Have him sit down and watch this tape of Tom Brady playing the quarterback position versus the Miami Dolphins on a continuous loop for an entire week. Just have Trey Lance watch Tom Brady play football for a week and study his footwork, his mechanics, his fundamentals, his over-the-top arm release, the way he maneuvers and manipulates the pocket, the way he bounces around, makes a slight step to the left or a slight step to the right. It is always gets himself in the proper and appropriate position to throw a football. He might bounce around a little bit, but when it's time for him to throw the football, sets his feet, squares his shoulders, forms a kinetic chain, gets his entire body in concert, and fires an accurate strike down the field to whoever he's thrown it to. Mike Evans, Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin, Cameron Brate, O.J. Howard, Scotty Miller, it doesn't matter. But once again, I'm going to keep belaboring this point as a fan of the position of playing quarterback and everything that encompasses that. If you're a young quarterback, listen to this podcast. If you're just a Pop Warner kid, a high school kid, a college kid, or if you have a son that's trying to play quarterback in the NFL, I'm telling you right now, I mean this with the utmost sincerity, sit your kid down, sit that young man down, and show him footage and tape of Tom Brady playing quarterback, and just watch him play. Watch his feet. Start with that. Just watch 5 minutes of Tom Brady's footwork. Like I said, he sets his feet and steps into every throw. The right foot, back leg, plant into the ground, step into your left foot, generate all the power from, your, like I said, the kinetic chain, get all that formed up through your hips, your thighs and everything, shoulders square, head up, down the field, accurate throws, strikes. This is how you play quarterback. This is perfect. He's still this good at 44. He's still this fundamentally sound. That's the biggest reason why he can still play until he's 44. The fundamentals, the mechanics, the nuance, the subtleties, the idiosyncrasies, everything, all the superlatives you want to throw out, everything that encompasses playing quarterback, he has it all at 44. It's ridiculous. And people get on me all the time about being a Tom Brady fan and liking Tom Brady so much. I'll never apologize for that. I tell people all the time, I appreciate people who are awesome at what they do. We are surrounded by constant, rampant mediocrity in this country. There's a number of people who just fucking suck at whatever they do. So I will always salute and applaud a motherfucker who's extraordinary at what he does or she does. In this instance, what he does, Tom Brady is extraordinary at playing quarterback. Even the games he struggles, last week versus New England, not a good game. Struggled in that game, I'll admit that. Belichick said in the post-game news conference, I've been playing against Tom Brady for 20 years. Who else knows Tom Brady better than Bill Belichick? No one. Brady had a bad game, I'll admit that, but look what happens. He has a bad game and bounces back with an incredible game. 30 of 41, 411, 5 tutties. Shut the fuck up, man. If you don't like Tom Brady, something's wrong with you. You're just a hater. I don't know what that man personally did to you, but at the end of the day, you have to appreciate good, quality football. And that's why, I mean, it makes me even more furious when I found out that Kyle Shanahan and his infinite wisdom didn't want Tom Brady. But I already talked about that. I'm not going into that anymore. It's over and done with. I'm leaving alone. But I'm just saying, this dude at 44 is better than at least 26 quarterbacks in the NFL right now. He's a top five quarterback in the NFL right now at 44 years of age. That doesn't make sense. Tom Brady, my advice to everyone, start drinking avocado smoothies. That's the key to success. Get on that TB12 method. Get some pliability in your workout. Whatever you got to do, just copy and paste what this motherfucker does because clearly it's working. The dude is incredible. Now, he banged up his thumb in this game, but he'll play. They got a game on Thursday night. They got a short week versus the Philadelphia Eagles, who had a very impressive win over the Carolina Panthers. Carolina's kind of regressed. They're on a two-game losing streak right now. They lost to Dallas last week, lost to Philadelphia over the weekend. And they got to figure some shit out. They just picked up Stephon Gilmore from the Patriots, former teammate of Tom Brady. But, yeah, Philadelphia and Tampa Bay this Thursday, I mean, it's a cool matchup. You got the old man, Tom Brady, versus the young gun, Jalen Hurts. Should be a fun matchup. I'm a football fan. I love football. I'm going to watch the game. But Tampa Bay 45, Miami 17. Miami, that season is going down the shitter right now. Tua Tagovailoa hurt. No surprise there. Out for a couple of weeks. Jacoby Brissett in there. You know, Brissett's a nice quarterback. I won't say anything negative about him, but he's a backup journeyman quarterback for a reason. And the defense, like I said earlier about Washington, like I say about a lot of teams, Miami had a great defense last year. It doesn't carry over on a yearly basis. Teams figure you out. And teams have figured out the Miami Dolphins. That team's in trouble. That team's in bad shape right now. They're not going to make the playoffs this year. Calling it right now. Miami will be lucky to win 6 games this year. That team is not good. The Thursday night game, the game that kicked off week 5. Great game. Rams 26, Seattle 17. Both starting quarterbacks suffered finger injuries in this game. Russ was knocked out of the game and out for a couple of weeks with a middle finger injury. Enter my man Geno Smith. Came in and engineered a touchdown drive. Had opportunity to engineer a game-winning drive. Couldn't get the job done through a pick. Tyler Lockett was tripped on that play. Should have been pass interference. Wasn't called. Oh, well. Rams win 26-17. Matt Stafford, nice second half after a slow first half, found a connection with DeSean Jackson down the field. DeSean Jackson, after all these years, still making big plays. That dude's awesome. He's incredible. Stafford was 13-19 for a 131 and a pick in the first half. Overthrew receivers, picked off in a pass in the back of the end zone. He tried to throw away. But in the second half, like I said, that 68-yard reception by DeSean Jackson, and finished 25-37 for 365 and a touchdown, with a passer rating going from 65.9 to 97.2. Matt Stafford makes that team elite. They were a quarterback away from being elite. Sean McVay realized that, made the deal sending Jared Goff to Detroit and bringing in Matt Stafford in the offseason. They're doing well, and that team is a force to be reckoned with in the crowded NFC, along with Arizona and Dallas. Can't forget about Green Bay. Some tough football teams. Early on in the season, we're only at week 5, but you're kind of starting to see the playoff format, the playoff landscape take shape a little bit. You're starting to see the real teams in the NFL, the contenders, separate themselves from the pretenders. It's only week 5, but you're kind of starting to see who's going to be there in January and potentially February in both conferences in the AFC and NFC. Real quick, Atlanta beat the Jets 27-20 in a game over in London. This game came on at fucking 6 o'clock in the morning. I live on the West Coast. I wasn't going to wake up to watch the fucking Atlanta Falcons and New York Jets. You can go to hell with that shit. I love football, but not that much. I'm not going to wake up at 6 a.m. on a Sunday and watch Atlanta and the New York Jets. All I know is that Kyle Pitts caught a touchdown pass this week. My man Zach Wilson struggled this week. Not as good as he was last week versus Tennessee. Matt Ryan had an impressive showing. That's all I can say about that game. Atlanta 27, Jets 20. Like I said, New York City football is garbage. Moving on. Ben Roethlisberger. Okay. Bounce back. I was one of the many people ready to stick a fork in Ben Roethlisberger, ready to call it quits for him. I was one of those people on the retirement bandwagon. I said on this podcast, the clock is ticking. Father Time is coming to get you. Other than Tom Brady, Father Time's undefeated. But Ben Roethlisberger had a nice game this week. Got to call it as I see it. Call it right down the middle, as I say at the beginning of the podcast. Ben played a good football game this week. Ben only attempted 25 passes against Denver, the fewest he has attempted all season, but he had completions that included 2 touchdown passes that traveled at least 15 air yards. He had 1 in the first 4 games of the season combined, according to research by ESPN Stats and Information. Ben completed 15 of 25 for 253 and 2 touchdowns, including 1 on the opening drive that looked identical to the one he had to Deontay Johnson against Green Bay a week ago. Ben was good. Not perfect. He was sacked once. He fumbled the ball as he got hit. He had 2 near interceptions in this game. You know, he's not Ben Roethlisberger of 2013 and 2014. I think this will be his last year as a quarterback in the Pittsburgh Steelers. But last Sunday, he had a nice game. Denver, like I said earlier, 3-0 start, 2-game losing streak. You know, there were whispers about Denver at the beginning of the season about, yeah, they're 3-0, but their strength of schedule, the opposition, not that good. That's looking more legitimate by the day. They've lost 2 football games in a row once they started playing against better competition. So we'll see where they go from here. Baltimore got them last week. Pittsburgh got them this week. They're starting to play real football teams right now, and they're starting to lose. Teddy Bridgewater, inconsistent. The Broncos secondary, this is troubling. This is shocking to me because I thought they had a good defense, in particular the secondary, but Kyle Fuller came over from the Chicago Bears, was targeted multiple times throughout the game, and gave up big plays on a repeated basis. Ronald Darby's out for a couple of weeks, and so he comes back, you're going to see more of Kyle Fuller being targeted and exploited by opposing defenses. They gave up over 300 last week to Lamar. They made Ben look good this week. It's not looking good for the Broncos secondary. And, you know, offensively, like I said, with Teddy being up and down, they need that defense to be stronger than what it is right now if they're really going to compete in the AFC West going forward. We'll see what happens with that. New Orleans, 33, Washington, 22. My guy, Jameis motherfucking Winston. The Jameis Winston experience. He'll throw a pick on one possession and come back and throw a fucking 72-yard dime down the field for a touchdown on the next possession. He threw 4 touchdown passes in this game, including that 72-yarder in the first quarter, including a 49-yard Hail Mary before halftime. I don't think there's too many quarterbacks in the NFL that throw a better deep ball than Jameis Winston. He don't get enough credit for that. Jameis is one of the better deep ball throwers in the NFL. New Orleans is 3-2. Jameis has played pretty decent football for New Orleans all season long. He hasn't been terrible. He's been pretty good. Like I said, he's been above average, decent, pretty good, good enough to win 3 football games. I think New Orleans can make the playoffs this year with Jameis Winston at quarterback. He was only 15-30 in this game for 279 yards, but he gives you 4 touchdown passes and big plays down the field to compensate for a 50% completion percentage. Alvin Kamara had a game-clinching 19-yard touchdown from Jameis Winston in this game. Overall, nice game. And like I said, Washington, the defense isn't there. Taylor Heinicke is unproven and showing to be a little bit of a fluke, a gimmick. A nice story, but his lack of arm strength is troubling. It's noticeable on a week-to-week basis. A guy like that, you see why he was a journeyman quarterback. You see why he was bouncing all over the league, why he played in the XFL for a little bit. Because he's just not that good. He's a good story. Seems like a nice guy. But he's just not that good to play on a week-to-week basis as a starter in the NFL. Like I said, the arm strength is an issue. Not the most physically gifted guy. Washington doesn't have a quarterback. And that's what hurts you when you try to rely on your defense on a year-to-year basis. Football is so much easier when you have a good quarterback. And the Washington football team that plays in Landover is finding that out. Well, they find it out every year because the Washington football team hasn't really had a good quarterback since 2012, RG3. Kirk Cousins had some nice years for them. But consistently on a year-to-year basis, they haven't had a quarterback in a couple of decades. I mean, with Joe Theismann, that's about it. 85, last time he played. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Washington just can't get it right at quarterback. They can't get it right on a lot of levels. That team, that organization's fucking trash. Moving on to another organization that appears to be in shambles right now. And this is what I really wanted to get to. I wanted to save this for last. The Las Vegas Raiders got off to a nice start, a nice feel-good story in the NFL. One of the NFL's signature franchises, a team that matters. A team you cannot tell the story of pro football without mentioning. The silver and black commitment to excellence. Just win, baby. Al Davis, Los Angeles, Oakland, now Las Vegas Raiders. The eternal flame, the fire that burns within every Raider. The autumn wind is a pirate swashbuckling through the league. As the late, great John Facenda once said many years ago, the Raiders are a team that you cannot talk about the story of the NFL without mentioning. They matter. And the NFL is better overall when the Raiders have a good football team, which they did have for the first couple of weeks of the season. Now they're on a 2-game losing streak. Chicago came in and manhandled them over the weekend, 20-9. But that's not the biggest story with the Raiders. No, it's not. The on-the-field product, the on-the-field play, that's one thing. But the off-the-field with the Raiders, that's a whole different ballgame. Professional douchebag and former head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, John Gruden, now finds himself in the unemployment line. Why, you may ask? Well, it's very simple. Let me explain it to you right now. A story broke over the weekend from multiple media outlets about John Gruden sending some racist, homophobic, overall fucked up emails to Demoris Smith, Roger Goodell, and many other folks where he just showed his ass over the weekend. According to the New York Times, John Gruden stepped down Monday as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders football team hours after the New York Times detailed emails in which he had made homophobic and misogynistic remarks following an earlier report of racist statements about a union leader, Demoris Smith. His resignation was a striking departure from the Football League for a coach who had won a Super Bowl with Tony Dungy's team, been a marquee analyst on ESPN, and returned to the NFL in 2018 and led the resurgent Raiders, which he had coached there years before. Quote, John Gruden said, "I have resigned as head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders," he said on Twitter in a statement issued by the team. "I love the Raiders and do not want to be a distraction. Thank you to all the players, coaches, staff, and fans of Raider Nation. I'm sorry. I never meant to hurt anyone." Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, an owner of a shitty haircut, said in a statement that he had accepted the resignation. Rich Bisaccia, I hope I got that right. If I didn't, fuck it. The Raiders special teams coordinator was elevated to interim head coach, the team said. Gruden's departure came after a New York Times report that the NFL officials, as part of a separate workplace misconduct investigation that did not directly involve him, found that Gruden had casually and frequently unleashed misogynistic and homophobic language over several years to denigrate people around the game and to mock some of the league's momentous changes. He denounced the emergence of women as referees, the drafting of a gay player, and the tolerance of players protesting during the play of the national anthem, according to emails reviewed by the New York Times. Gruden's messages were sent to Bruce Allen, the former president of the Washington football team, and others while he was working for ESPN as a color analyst during Monday Night Football. In the emails, Gruden called the league's commissioner Roger Goodell a faggot and a clueless anti-football pussy, and said that Goodell should not have pressured Jeff Fisher, then the coach of the St. Louis Rams, to draft queers as a reference to Michael Sam, a gay football player chosen by the team in 2014. In numerous emails during a seven-year period ending in early 2018, Gruden criticized Goodell and the league for trying to reduce concussions and said that Eric Reed, a player who had demonstrated during the playing of the national anthem, should be fired. In several instances, Gruden used a homophobic slur to refer to Goodell and offensive language to describe some NFL owners, coaches, and journalists who cover the league. Gruden, Allen, the NFL, and the Raiders did not respond to any requests for comment. Although not with the team at the time, Gruden was still influential in the league and highly coveted as a coach. He had won Super Bowl 37 with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the team that Tony Dungy built during the 2002 season. And in 2018, he was hired for a second stint as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, Oakland Raiders, which includes defensive lineman Carl Nassib, the first active NFL player to publicly declare that he is gay. The league said last week that it shared emails with the Raiders in which Gruden made derogatory comments. Gruden told ESPN on Sunday that the league was reviewing emails in which he criticized Goodell and explained that he had been upset about team's owners' lockout of the players in 2011 when some of the emails were written. Gruden said in that interview that he had used an expletive to refer to Goodell, and that he did so because he disapproved of Goodell's emphasis on safety, which he believed was scaring parents into steering their sons away from football. But Gruden's fuckery was not limited to 2011. No. Gruden exchanged emails with Allen and other men that included photos of women wearing only bikini bottoms, including one photo of two Washington football team cheerleaders. Gruden also criticized President Barack Obama during his re-election campaign in 2012, as well as then-Vice President Jim Crow Joe Biden, a.k.a. Corn Pop, who Gruden called a nervous, clueless pussy. He used similar words to describe Goodell and Damaris Smith, the executive director of the NFL Players Association. The league is already investigating Gruden as a result of another email he wrote to Allen in 2011 in which he used racist terms to describe Smith, who, by the way, is black. In the email, Gruden, who was white, obviously, was working for ESPN at the time on Monday Night Football, where he criticized Smith's intelligence and used a racist trope to describe his face. The correspondence was first reported by the Wall Street Journal and confirmed by the New York Times. Wow. I mean, where do I start? I mean, first of all, I agree with his assessment of Jim Crow Joe Biden, a.k.a. Corn Pop. He's a clueless, nervous pussy. I actually agree with that. Fuck Joe Biden. But everything else, I mean, like I said, where do I start? There's a lot to unpack here. This maybe should be a separate podcast. There's a lot going on right here. You call the commissioner a fag. You complain about another football team signing a gay football player. You call the executive director of the Players Association, basically you make fun of it and ridicule his lips, says he has Michelin tire-sized lips in reference to Damaris Smith. You criticize players, you talk about player safety, you talk about Eric Reed should have been fired for taking a knee during the anthem. You call Commissioner Goodell a pussy on top of calling him a faggot. Jesus Christ, John Gruden, I mean, God damn, you're trying to get pictures of cheerleaders in nothing but bottoms. The first thing I'm going to talk about is the overall stupidity of John Gruden. You work for a $1 billion corporation. I myself work for a $1 billion corporation. There's things you have to know and understand. Your workplace email, keep that as professional as possible. Don't incriminate yourself. Don't snitch on yourself at work. Work-related emails from official work-related email addresses, keep it business only. Corporate, professional, talk about the job. If you want to say all this shit, you can say whatever you want. Say it on your personal email and then go back and delete that shit. I mean, how stupid and arrogant can one guy be? I mean, a lot of people got the information misconstrued. This is not a personal witch hunt on John Gruden. This was an investigation into the Washington football team and their fuckery with their cheerleaders. And that's how these emails became uncovered. And then more and more information came out. Initially, the first controversy with Gruden, in which he gave a post-game speech about in the news conference after the loss to Chicago. Initially, the controversy was about what he said about DeMarre Smith and the size of his lips. So you're talking about a black man and his facial features. And he wasn't going to face any real discipline for that, because you can talk about black people all day. But once the information came out about what he said about Goodell being a fag and talking about Michael Sam, a homosexual football player, being drafted, once that information came out, that's when the shit hit the fan. And that's when a day later, Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, had to go meet with John Gruden at Raider headquarters and pretty much ask him politely, hey, you know what? Too much of a shitstorm going on right now. Too much controversy. You're in hot water right now. It's either you resign or I got to fucking fire you. One of two is going to happen. Either way, you're no longer going to be the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. John Gruden signed a 10-year, $100 million contract. How much of a fucking idiot can you be, knowing you got $100 million on the table? He hadn't even made the playoffs yet and is getting paid $10 million per season every year with no threat of him being fired. I've been speaking about this for a long time. Of all the coaches who should have been on the hot seat coming into this season, John Gruden should have been top of the list. This alleged offense, another guy that's pompous and arrogant and just condescending, a fucking douchebag, a pretentious jackass who has this phony reputation of being an offensive guru and a genius and a football savant, a phony reputation of being a good football coach. Like I said, you won a Super Bowl with a team that Tony Dungy built. Simeon Rice, Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks, John Lynch, Rondé Barber, Mike Allstott, Warwick Dunn. Those are all those are Tony Dungy's players. You don't get no credit for that in my eyes. I've been saying that for years. I don't even like John Gruden. I never liked John Gruden. Like I said, he took credit for what Tony Dungy built. I get pissed off as a black person when white people come in and try to take credit for something that a black person did. How apropos that John Gruden gets relieved of his duties or resigns on Columbus Day, a holiday commemorating when a white person took credit for some shit that some brown people did. John Gruden, as I described him, is a lifetime douchebag. He's a piece of shit, and all his stories coming to fruition, coming to light, is just further validation of that. You heard what Keyshawn Johnson, a former player of his, a wide receiver on that 2002 Super Bowl team with Tampa Bay, said. He never liked Gruden. He called him a used car salesman. He said he was always phony. And now he's reveling in the fact that all this information came to light, and the entire world now gets to see how much of a douchebag John Gruden is. But this situation is complicated. Because on one hand, I don't like John Gruden, but on the other hand, I don't like looking through emails from like 10 years ago and using that as a way to condemn someone right now or fire them and make them lose their job. I understand this was an investigation into the Washington football team shenanigans, and John Gruden's stupid ass got caught up in it. You know, it's all on him. It's 100% on him. He's stupid. He's an idiot. If you're going to do shit like that, cover your tracks. Delete the emails. Make a phone call to Hillary Clinton and ask her what to do with emails you don't want the public to see. Figure it out, dude. You got money. You got resources. Cover that shit up. Don't leave that shit in the past, in the rear view, and let that shit go untouched. But what a lot of these celebrities got to understand is that eventually, if enough people don't like you, they're going to find some shit in your past to bury you right now. We see it all the time throughout all forms of entertainment, music, sports, movies, reality TV shows, regular TV shows. It doesn't matter. To me, I don't want to say it was a witch hunt, but I will say this. There's a number of people in league circles who probably don't like John Gruden. For all the stories I've heard from people, from former players, from people who had to work with him at ESPN, they always say he's a lot to deal with. He's a tough guy to get along with on a daily basis. He has a lot of enemies. So when this story comes out, and when the investigation is done, and they see John Gruden's name keeps popping up, one after the other, this email, that email, he said this, he said that, eventually, all these people who don't like you are going to use that as an excuse to bury you. And that's what happened to John Gruden. It's stupidity on his part. If you want to say these things, say whatever you want. Like I said, freedom of speech, I'm a firm advocate for that. I have a podcast. I say whatever I want on here. I would hate for someone to tell me what I can and can't say. That day is going to come. The further I go with this podcast, the more it gains in popularity and success, the bigger it gets. There's going to come a time and place when someone's going to tell me, you can't say that. You can't make that joke. Stop using the F word so much. You can't call women bitches all the time. Or whatever. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to be more palatable. We want to sell you to a more mainstream audience. That's going to come one day. I forecast that. I don't like censorship. I also don't like John Gruden. I don't like racist white people. John Gruden to me comes across as a quintessential old angry white dude in the comments section on Facebook and Instagram who will give you a hate emoji reaction to any post where you're celebrating your blackness or calling white people out on their bullshit. He's that guy sitting in the driver's side of his Ford F-150 with some Oakley sunglasses on, a shitty goatee, and the American flag background, and just shaking his head and talking about things ain't what they used to be. This country is not what it once was. John Gruden's that guy complaining about the woke left and Antifa and Black Lives Matter and, you know, dumbass conspiracy theories. He's probably anti-vax. He already showed last year he's anti-wearing a mask. You know, he's a conservative douchebag. That is what it is, man. Like, John Gruden's the kind of guy that laments about the good old days of Ronald Reagan being the president. And, you know, a simpler time in America where niggers and fags knew their place and didn't try to rise up in prominence. John Gruden's one of those guys. Go read the emails. The proof is in the pudding. Look at the language that he used. Once again, I don't care. I expect it. I've done my own independent data and research over 36 years of life. I've done my own analysis, Venn diagrams, pie charts, graphs, etc. I've come to the conclusion about 92% of white people are racist anyway. This is the conclusion I've come to. This is what I've realized and seen over the years. Most of y'all don't like black people. It is what it is. I don't care. I don't even get offended by it anymore. I expect it. I know it to be true for a lot of people. Most white people don't like black people. They don't like anyone who's not white with blonde hair and blue eyes. John Gruden's one of those people. He only coexists with black people because they can help him win football games. That's it. The same reason many coaches only coexist with black people because they can help them win football games. The same reason many of the owners, all the owners. There's only one minority owner in the NFL, Shad Khan, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. The other 31 are all members of the Good Old Boys Network. And the only reason they put up with black people is because those black people can help them win football games and put money in their pocket. I understand all these things. This is why I'm not offended by racism anymore. The way John Gruden spoke on those emails is the way regular, everyday, average folks speak in locker rooms, boardrooms, behind closed doors when there's no microphones around. I've seen it, I've heard it my entire life. I spent 4 years in the Navy. There's plenty of guys in the Navy who speak the exact same way. You know how many times I've had a white person ask me, why is there a Black History Month and not a White History Month? There's people out there who really believe that and think that way. Why the fuck do I gotta dial one to speak English? That's bullshit. We're in America, damn it. Give me some bacon and beer. People actually talk like this. I'm not surprised. There was a guy in the Navy, a white dude from Texas, who every day had a different racist, fucked up joke about black people for me. This guy would come to me on a regular basis and say, hey, Gordon, how come black people don't like taking Tylenol? Because you gotta pick cotton to get to it. He would say this to me. Until one day I had to cuss his ass out, let him know about himself, and that was it. There was no more dumbass black jokes. I got tired of hearing it after a while. The most offensive part about the jokes is that none of them were funny or original. I'd already heard all of them before. You know, speaking of comedy and being funny, John Gruden, in real time, in real life, lived Dave Chappelle's joke from his Netflix special, The Closer, that everyone's so pissed off about, got their panties in a bunch about, where all Dave Chappelle did was speak the truth. You can say whatever you want to say or do whatever you want to do to black people, and nothing's going to happen to you. John Gruden said the first leak was the email in which he spoke about the facial features of Damaris Smith and the size of his lips. Nothing came out of that except a written apology. But there was no flack. He wasn't going to lose his job over that. Nothing was said about that. But when the further emails came out in which he used homophobic slurs against Goodell and Michael Sam and spoke about the gay community, that's when he lost his job. It's like Dave Chappelle said, the baby, the rapper, actually killed a man. He killed a brother in a Walmart in North Carolina. Nothing happened to his career. But then he said some shit about gay people. All of a sudden, he had to be canceled. His career got fucked up. That's reality. That's America in 2021. Say and do whatever you want to do to black people. They don't matter. The NFL will put in racism in the end zone of every football stadium in the NFL. And they'll play Lift Every Voice before the game, the quote-unquote black national anthem. It's all performative bullshit. It's not real. It's like D.C. with all the politicians. It's all performative bullshit. It's no different than all the Democrats taking a knee on Capitol Hill wearing kente cloths. It's performative bullshit. You don't really care about black people at all. You do these things for the public, for the camera, for TV, to present the phony facade that you give a fuck about black people, when in reality, in the grand scheme of things, no one cares about black people. This has been proven consistently on a day-to-day basis. But when you fuck with the gay community, watch your ass. It's going to get ugly for you. That's when the rubber meets the road. That's when the shit hits the fan. Speak about that community, now you're in trouble. Even if it's just a joke, because no one can take a joke anymore, because everyone's sensitive nowadays. No one can even hear a different opinion anymore. Everyone wants to live inside of an echo chamber where all they hear is similar thoughts to pacify and coddle them, because no one wants to be challenged with a different thought or opinion anymore. Society's all fucked up. I don't mean to be on my soapbox right now, but let's just get right to it. These are my thoughts. This is what I think. You can cancel me. Like I said, we're in a society right now where everyone wants to dig through the cracks, whatever you want to call it, and find some shit about you from 5, 10, 15 years ago and ruin your career, ruin your life about it. Don't people evolve over 10 or 15 years? I doubt John Gruden's evolved. I'm not making any excuses for him. Like I say, he's a piece of shit. But, you know, let's say I do become famous off of this. Someone can easily go on my Facebook page and find one of my Facebook memories of some fucked up foul ass shit I said 10, 15 years ago, or a joke I made about a certain community. I'm an asshole. I made jokes about everybody. I'm a low-budget Dave Chappelle. I talk shit about everyone. It is what it is. Facebook memories pop up on my news feed every day. I look at that shit, I'm like, damn, I was dumb as hell in 2012. What the fuck was I talking about? I had a post one day. I just come out of a breakup with some bitch I was dating in Frederick, Maryland. Her and I just broke up. I was in my feelings about it. I ain't gonna lie. I was pissed off about it. I went on Facebook and said, bitches ain't shit. They're only good at causing problems and sucking dick. I said that in 2012. Now, if I were to tweet that out right now, if I was a famous, successful podcaster, and I was to tweet that out in 2021, that bitches ain't shit, they're only good at causing problems and sucking dick, cancel Dion Gordon. Cancel Dion Gordon right now. Get him the fuck out of here. He's misogynistic. He's a chauvinist. Asshole is a piece of shit. Get rid of him. Send his ass back to Frederick, Maryland. Send him back to Africa, damn it. That's what people will say. I know people. I see people. I'm around people on a daily basis. I study. I watch. I observe. I do the knowledge, look, listen, and observe every day on people. I know people's tendencies. I don't mean to sound arrogant about this, but this is the way I give it up. Black people in this country only exist under two terms and conditions: entertainment and convenience. We're here to entertain you, as I'm doing with this podcast, as football players do on the football field, and we're convenient, as I was for 4 years in the United States Navy. I was convenient. I wore a uniform. I represented the United States of America. I am a United States sailor. I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America and defend the blah, 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 blah. I was convenient. Now I'm entertaining. I'm a good Negro. I'm entertaining and I'm convenient. As a black person, once you stop being entertaining or convenient, that's when you get taken out. That's when you got to go. That's a different story. I won't get all into that, but that's just That's what I see. That's what I call. That is what it is. Like I said, 36 years of life, the interactions I've had with different white folks from I grew up in Frederick, Maryland. That's a redneck ass town. Let's call it what it is. Right up the street, up north, about 20 or 30 miles, is a little town called Thurmont. To this day, they still have Klan rallies in Thurmont, Maryland. It's only 30 miles away from where I grew up at. That town's redneck and racist as shit. So from my combined experience of being in the Navy and growing up in Frederick, Maryland, I am not surprised about what John Gruden said. My surprise is that he was stupid enough to get caught and didn't cover his tracks. That's my surprise. That's my 2 cents and maybe a couple dollars on this John Gruden situation. He's a fucking idiot. He's a piece of shit. So what if he got fired? I shed no tears for him. He was a mediocre football coach. He took credit for winning with someone else's team. He was never good. Tampa Bay turned into shit after 2002. He got fired a couple years later. He was a decent analyst on Monday Night Football. They lucked into another job with the Las Vegas Raiders, never made the playoffs, and got fired for being an asshole. Fuck John Gruden and anybody who supports him. So all that being said, back to football now. Smooth segue. Tennessee beat Jacksonville. Jacksonville's on a 20-game losing streak right now. Urban Meyer is the luckiest man in America right now because no one's talking about Urban Meyer's fuckery now that John Gruden exposed himself as being a complete douchebag. So Urban Meyer, you caught a break this week, my friend. New England came from behind and beat Houston. Good win, 25-22. They're 2-3 right now. I think that covers all the games, but I really wanted to get to that John Gruden controversy situation and just let my feelings be known on that. Like I said, there's no surprise in what he said. There's no surprise in the way he thinks and what he believes in. Did not catch me off guard that he feels the way he feels about Eric Reed or the way, you know, he talked about DeMar Smith or Obama or anybody else. Even the things he said about Goodell, nothing he said surprised me. The surprise is that he let that shit linger to the point where he can get caught and now be relieved of his duties. Oh, well, cry me a river. I'll play my violin for John Gruden. Oh, well. And that brings us to the conclusion of the Dion Gordon podcast, this episode of the Dion Gordon podcast. Once again, always grateful, very much appreciative, eternally thankful, all the above. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it ever so much. Peace be to you and yours. Picture me rolling. I'm out.